someone in the government leaked it. There was political blowback. Rather than standing strong and saying, as he did in the second presidential debate, this was criminal activity and I'll do everything I can to make these families whole, the Biden administration buckled for some reason, ended the talks, walked away. At first tried to say that we walked away. That was completely not true. They haven't repeated that line. And so now we're back in court, and the Biden administration will be defending the family separation practice in these tort suits. And not only that, in the, there's many of these tort suits, but in the ACLU's class action tort suit, not only did we sue the United States, but we sued individual federal officials like Stephen Miller, like former Attorney General Sessions. So the Biden DOJ is going to be walking into court, not only defending the United States in this horrendous, unprecedented, brutal practice, but also defending Stephen Miller, Sessions, down the line for their individual roles. I would have thought it would have been unthinkable for the Biden DOJ to walk into court and do that, but that's where we are.
And it was Dr. Joe Biden who was put in charge of bringing families together, isn't that right?
We're not really sure exactly what's going on. There is a task force there, but how much Dr. Joe Biden, you know, is Joe Biden is there working on it day to day, it's a little unclear.
Well, Legal Alert, I want to thank you for being with us, Deputy Director of the ACLU Immigrants' Rights Project. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Has job openings. Go to Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. Wear a mask.
This is KBOO.
On behalf of the entire KBOO community, we'd like to offer our sincerest thanks for your contribution to KBOO's end-of-year membership drive. We challenged KBOO supporters to help us meet 3 donation matches and raise $45,000, and you stepped up. Your generous support, combined with hundreds of other community radio donors, helped to raise $85,000 for KBOO. We knew you could do it, and together we did.
Good morning. It is 8:01 and you are listening to KBOO Portland. This is The Gap. My name is Tammy and with me is the witty, clever, chic, astute, compelling, and perceptive Althea Billings. How are you, Althea?
I'm good now. Oh my goodness. This is the descriptors today.
I wrote them down. I'm going to write them down every time.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, I love the ones you do off the dome, but that it felt like you could just keep going. Yeah, I'm doing all right with the descriptors, with the saw a little bit of sunshine this morning, yeah, on the drive-in, and the song gets me all hyped up. I'm happy to be here this morning.
Also, to hear that KBOO made the found. I just can't talk today.
The Drive Gold?
The Drive Gold, right? The Fun, yeah, Drive, that's what I was trying to say.
There we go, there,
yeah,
we go.
Wow, yeah, that's amazing. Thank you, yay, all for doing that. That's all you. If you can hear me, that you probably made that happen, so thank you.
Yeah.
Wow.
We very much appreciate that.
I'm pumped, I'm caffeinated, mm-hmm, and ready for action.
Let's get into it then. Why not? Why the heck not, dude?
Or else something is this table's going to get flipped over. Or,
yeah,
something.
And I think it's bolted to the ground. So you got a lot going on over there.
Oh, it's from the French press that you got me for my birthday. So,
oh, okay.
That's what you got to think. No more instant coffee. And I'm getting all the good stuff. It's letting it steep and everything.
Yeah,
every
double edged sword. I've opened.
You
got to
deal with it.
Too hyped up. I like put too much cream in my coffee this morning,
oh,
and that
I
makes me
that.
Feel like, but I like had to drink it, you know, because,
yeah,
it's not like
course.
I'm going to make more. And now I feel like I need to get the mileage out of the coffee, mm, because I had too much oat milk creamer in it. So we got to buckle down. Let's get into it.
I'll give you a little bit of mine, like fairy dust. We'll do a little exchange.
No, it does work that way. If you got good energy, I'll have good energy. On this show, we like to do two halves. First half, we'll do an interview or a news roundup. Today we got a news roundup for you. And in the second half, we have our community question where we'll be talking to you, the listener. So if you want to talk to us this morning, stay by the phone. We'll be there in about a half hour. Yes. So shall we jump into some of these news topics?
I'm flailing in the water.
Okay. I think that means yes. So last week, we talked a bunch about the state of coronavirus in Oregon, and one of those issues that we talked about was this for-profit testing company.
CCC.
Center for COVID Control. And we talked a lot about how if your name's a little too on the nose, maybe look twice at it. But it was a for-profit testing, COVID testing company that was operating, had three locations in the Portland area, and actually has been operating nationally. And the Oregon Department of Justice is investigating it because based off of complaints that they got. And, you know, just to give you a picture of what has been looked at elsewhere, there was the same company down in Florida. They got a complaint that there were people in line for a test that, like, got the email from the company that they were negative.
Well, they're looking for a rapid test. It's Can I so use rapid. That joke again this week?
I think it's okay.
Okay, yeah.
I think as long as we don't dwell on it.
but, yeah, that's which would be impossible. A bunch of people also got... just their results before getting tested, or just not even getting a results at all, which is
waiting, always nerve-wracking. Waiting weeks for results. And I mean, it's all because there's been such a COVID testing scarcity, right? People are desperate to get a test because they think they've been exposed or because they need it for work or for school. And there are now like thousands of these test results that have been reported to the Oregon Health Authority that are now called into question in their validity. There's a Willamette Week article we'll link on our show notes, kbu.fm/thegap, that kind of outlines what it was like as somebody going to this testing site. Seemed very informal, very much come up to this card table, stick this Q-tip in your nose and drop it in the bin. The very interesting stuff that it was, you know, happening for so long, and that the, you know, pandemic profiteering and all that.
Right. And I mean, the way that they describe it is like, you know, of course there are regulations. So this breakdown, I was enlightened because of course they're the facilities themselves, but the facilities have to have some sort of certification. And the loophole is that the one company has a certification, but they have a bunch of different locations.
Mm.
The loophole. And, yeah. And because it's, you know, we're under this emergency status right now, you know, emergencies, you know, cause there are different processes for emergencies, mm-hmm. you know, which are a little bit easier considering it's an emergency. So using that, the facilities themselves didn't need to be certified individually, but some of them were actually straight up storefronts. So
yeah, were they certified like as like a truck.
Mobile? Yeah,
like a mobile truck. Yeah, one. I was gonna say food truck. And I was like, that's not right.
I know the food just only came to mind. So that, you know, so that's like another red flag. But then of course they're asking, you know, who's actually doing the testing for these samples, as well as, you know, who owns it. You know, so what's not necessarily the company, but more specifically located here in Portland. And that was also interesting because, you know, it gave me this notion that whomever decided to, like, you know, have one of these locations, these for-profit COVID testing centers, just kind of looking at it as a franchise, you know, kind of like how you have fast food franchises and it's just like, whatevs, you know, I'm kind of covered under this larger umbrella because, but right. I'm still making hella money off of this franchise, where it's not because it's a testing center for during a pandemic. So it's not, although what you eat is also very important, but you know, this was interesting. And how many people did not want to answer any questions also? It's like,
Yeah, and that it, I mean, because they've been operating in Oregon since October 2021.
Yeah,
and like you were saying, part of it is because I mean, it's loopholes, right? Of course, in the laboratory certifications, but it's also like loopholes that the federal government laid out to try to expedite all of this stuff, that then was like exploited by profiteers, essentially. So. Anyway, but I mean, not that this is like the solution, but folks are able to order their at-home tests now from the USPS website. You can get four per address. I know. I found out about it the day the news broke, and I looked on there. I put in my address, and like my roommate had already done it.
Oh wow!
So, I think those are supposed to ship later this month.
Well, it's about time. I don't know. I have a lot to say about that. Maybe two years too late, but okay, if you're waking up now. Are they going to throw a mask in there, too, for fun, for doing us a favor? Thanks. About time.
What if, I think if you tell them that it's your birthday, they'll send you an N95. They're like, do you want to go to the grocery store and not get Omicron? If it's your birthday, we'll send you an extra. I wonder if it's like... You know, have you ever seen those videos on Instagram of people being like packing things for my small business?
Oh right, yeah.
And they put the pretty paper and like the confetti, and they like gave you some extra stickers.
Yeah, right. You have the backstory. Yeah,
that's what I'm envisioning for the COVID tests that are gonna come in the mail.
That's if we're lucky. But yeah, we'll link that article in the website.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some swear words in there too. So I always appreciate that when people are very
if we're talking about fun things at the very end, there was supposed to be a tigered address for another one of these places, essentially.
COVID testing center there.
Yeah, and so the Willamette Week reporter Sophie Peel went there, and it was just somebody's house who had said that they could use his address to like file or whatever.
That's so sketchy. Like that's
We asked how he found the work. Quote, I just looked around, he replied. I don't know, I just got it. He offered to make a bet with this reporter about whether the company would get in regulatory trouble. We declined. He said the offer stood. Quote, you know where I live. Anytime in like reporting where you get to say with this reporter, I love it. In the eyes of this reporter, trying to make a bet with, like, I just love that. Anyway,
it's very clear. Like, you know, in the last week we were talking about it, and I'm like, I'm really surprised that they're using the word scam. Like, that's such a strong word. But reading this, I'm just like, it's a scam. Yeah. Everyone knows it's a scam, and we are the butt of the joke, and it's, you know, painful.
Yeah, I think it's kind of shifted from like, like thinking that it's mostly legitimate with maybe some
maybe
bad
they didn't
parts,
know, but yeah, like
rather
they, yeah.
than it's mostly bad with maybe some true test results. We're not sure.
There's like one. The only truth in it is that it happened during the COVID pandemic. It's like at this point. Yeah. I mean, even Center for COVID, CCC, it just doesn't even sound legitimate. I don't know, but that's anywho's
taking the control out of the Center for COVID. It's the Center for COVID, not the Center for COVID Control.
Oh.
Anyway. All right, let's move on to our next story. We'll do just a little quick one here, but we as the show and, you know, communities in this area have, of course, been following the Newburgh School Board, oh my gosh, since August, when they, the school board, while school was out of session, right, put together a ban on Black Lives Matter and Pride flags, calling them quasi-political, and firing the superintendent when the superintendent wouldn't enforce it because the lawyers told him, rightfully so, that it would be absolutely unconstitutional to do so.
We've been there, tried that.
Yeah.
That's what came out.
Yeah. Some good back episodes on that if anyone's curious, and a lot of great reporting out there on this. But just this week, there was a recall election for two of the main leaders of this conservative group on the board that has been passing this kind of thing, and they seem to have survived the recall effort, which is, you know, interesting. I think it was not like a massive margin, but I mean, getting people to turn out for a school board election, getting people to turn out for a school board recall election, wild. And the person who, I mean, was you know, in charge of this recall election said, you know, of course they were disappointed, but that they're looking ahead to lawsuits from the teachers' union and from the ACLU about how unconstitutional this is. And another thing is that they're also, like, financially tanking the district, which, you know, with people that we've interviewed about this, that is part of it, that they want to have, like, they want to have schools go private. They want to have this, like, extreme oversight, right? Because when they fired the former superintendent, Joe Morlock, he gets basically his entire year's pay plus severance, which is like 100K plus like plus they're gonna have to hire an interim superintendent for all of this backlog of work, which it's already an absolute mess in schools right now. Like, you don't need to be firing administrators when people are so burned out. Like, kids walked out of Grant High School today. These are different school districts. Grant High School this week because COVID was so out of control. But that's the school district, whatever. Anyway.
Still a good example. I'm just going to say, someone's getting sued.
They're definitely getting sued.
My managerial 2022.
So they're going to pay for a superintendent that they don't have, that they fired for political reasons because he wouldn't enforce an illegal ban on Black Lives Matter and Pride flags, which all has to do with, like, First Amendment expression, freedom of speech. And they're going to have to hire a firm to, like, find them a new superintendent. Like,
who's paying for all this? This is the best part.
That is the taxpayer, of course.
That's
the little old taxpayer. You've heard of them. Anyway, that's
this
what's going
so
on in
Newburgh. This is so
painful.
This is like just playing with, it's playing with people's everything and our future everything, you know, and our current everything, and disrespecting the past as it was. This is really bad. Again, I'm gonna say it. I said it once. I'll say it again. Someone is getting sued.
Yeah. What is this year called for you, Tammy?
2020 sued.
2020 sued. There we go. In Newburgh, that is certainly going to be the case.
I mean, we're seeing all of, you know, from the last 2 years, I mean, things from 2020 finally starting to, we just saw all the court cases, you know, and people, you know, some people somehow being not guilty, but some people getting the full extent of the law, as they say. So, you know, things happen, and for every action there's a reaction, you know. Mm-hmm. What I say, for every Friday night there's a Sunday morning, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You can't just dilly dally all day long and not expect you to, you know, have some sort of results for the harms that you're just like bestowing on people, on, you know, unsuspectingly. We didn't do nothing. What do you want? You know, just let people do their thing. But no, I can go on this rant forever. 2020 soon, there's the consequences are coming back.
Yeah, there's a can I just quote one thing because I think is funny, in like a dark way.
Of course, yeah.
The school board, Newburgh school board chair Dave Brown, told K2 that he's disappointed in the division he's seen in his community and would, at the very least, consider making a change to the flag ban that helped spark the recall effort. "Quote: I just want to see us move past recalls and get back to education." Right. That's what we're doing.
Well, you know, Thea, that's always going to be the person who, it's like it's an abusive relationship. It's like, why are you crying? Well, because you just beat me. Well, why do you have to bring that up? What?
It's too emotional in here right now. What do you mean?
You're being hysterical right now.
You're being hysterical.
Like, what?
Yeah.
But now they've seen the mess that they made, and then they're like, okay, maybe I need to like somehow clean it up. So I hope so. I just wonder how much of our money he'll clean up this mess.
Newburgh school district voters tax money to fight the ACLU. It's always a good look, don't you think, fighting the ACLU?
These are strange times. These are bizarre.
Very strange times. And yeah,
to me,
I see a very clear trajectory of how this is going to go. But the financial cost was surprising to me of how much not having a superintendent will cost. And that you now have an entire backlog of superintendent work.
Right. During such a time where there is, like, so much distress in school districts and students and, you know, in students' lives. And
it's tough stuff.
Yeah. Sending a lot of love to the Newburgh students. To all students. 100%. To all students. It's not.
And teachers.
And teachers.
You guys are sticking it out.
And parents, you know.
And parents,
Just everyone. Everyone gets a bunch of love right now.
Except for four certain members of the Newburgh school board that voted for this.
Althea's love is not unconditional.
It has conditions. Just a couple. I feel like they're very basic. Anyway.
Saving your energy.
Yeah, are you ready for our next story?
Yes.
Okay, so this one is very exciting to me personally.
I see the sparkle in your eye already.
I do have a sparkle. I got a sparkle in my eye. I got a spring in my step. I have given probably the rant on this show before about... So we're talking about Portland city government. We're talking about the structure of Portland city government. why it's weird, why it works even worse than other city governments in the commissioner state form
of government mm-hmm. here. And you've mentioned many times why it doesn't work, why it's racist, why it's mm-hmm. it's not representative of yeah. us, and why it got us to where we are now. But you've recently learned some more.
I learned some more information. So, yeah. So right now what's happening, every 10 years, the city of Portland has something called the charter review process, where there is like a board of community members that look at the charter, which is like the city's founding document. You can think of it as like the constitution of the city. And they investigate making changes, and can any reforms or changes that they want to make, they will then, you know, draft it up, refer it to the voter for the November ballot. And that's what they're working on right now. And part of that is this survey that is being run by the Coalition of Communities of Color. We'll link it. It's a great survey. I'm also a nerd for surveys. I love a good survey. But it's really trying to get folks who live in Portland, who vote in Portland, but also people, you know, if you work in Portland, you spend a lot of time in Portland, you have family in Portland, it's also a survey that is, you have the option to take. And it wants to figure out, you know, how do people feel best represented? And there's some kind of like big picture things of like why the commission style of government is extra bad. But there's a lot of like specific questions and things that we could potentially change to alleviate some of those things. And I did an interview with Sol Mora, the community engagement manager, yesterday, also on the website. Very interesting stuff. But yeah, so we have this commission form of government, right? And here's what I found out this week by reading through a bunch of great research that Sightline Institute did and that Coalition of Communities of Color was a part of, all part of this charter review process, is that the commission style of government, which is, you know, what we've got, where you have, you know, the people that we elect to be our legislators for the city, right? A city council person is also like the administrator of a bunch of bureaus. So like different positions have different bureaus. You know, you have like the Water Bureau, the Parks Bureau, Transportation and stuff like that. They're also like the boss of the administrator, the CEO of those departments. And it's a weird system. It's a bad system. Everybody else stopped doing it a long time ago. Portland is the only major city that runs this type of situation anymore. But what I learned and what I think colors it very interestingly is that at one point in time, a commission style of government was a reform. It was a fix to ills of politics of yore. Basically, in like the 1890s, 1910s, there was like this political boss, like spoils system. You might remember from American history class, like Boss Tweed in New York City. It was these like party machines, and you know, everybody. And at that point in time in the United States, there wasn't a professional civil service. It wasn't like that you could work in government in a nonpartisan capacity. So every time somebody new would get elected, everybody gets kicked out of the Transportation Bureau, and you got a new guy in charge of buses and trains and stuff.
Very much
mafia style, and quite frequently it was like, you know, somebody who like greased the wheels, donated to the campaign, you know, whatever mm-hmm. kind of stuff like that, and not necessarily somebody who had any kind of expertise. So the commission style of government was kind of a fix for that because it was invented in Galveston, Texas, I think, or they started doing it first, whatever. Essentially to try to force voters to elect somebody that had relevant experience. So whoever's gonna be in charge of the Transportation Bureau shouldn't just be like some rich guy's kid that like, you know, hung out with the guy who's in charge of the party. It should be, you know, somebody who's ever taken a bus, that kind of thing.
Right.
And so,
although luckily we've managed to like make it so that it is some rich guy's kid, you know.
No, yes.
There's a little bit of all of it,
but right.
Yeah.
With the existence of a professional civil service, like people professionally, you can be a bureaucrat, work in government in a nonpartisan fashion. That kind of necessity is gone, right? And so commission style governments between like the 1920s and into like the 60s and 70s was pretty popular in the United States, but a certain Voting Rights Act took away a lot of those because of Section 5 preclearance, which covered much of the South. And basically what that part of the Voting Rights Act did was that all of these jurisdictions, whether that's like a county, a city, you know, a whole state, would have an entire like, if you were going to change any regulation, it would show up, like, the federal government would have to be like, are you doing discrimination, though? Are you trying to disenfranchise black people? Let me check. Oh, you are? No, you can't do that. So it would be before they went into effect, whereas for the rest of the United States, under the Voting Rights Act, if you find, you know, redistricting or whatever to be discriminatory, you have to sue to get it changed. Anyway, a bunch of places in the South ended up having to ditch their commission style of government because it was so discriminatory under the Voting Rights Act. Portland, Oregon did not, because Oregon wasn't under preclearance, although make the argument they definitely should have been with a constitution that said that this was supposed to be a white-only state. And so that's kind of like why it has existed for so long. And boy, did me finding out that like scratch an itch for me of figuring out why we've gotten to where we are and why, you know, we've been stuck like this for so long. And now there's like an opportunity to change it. There's like a couple different ways that like the style of government could go, but there's a whole bunch of options on this survey. Let me get back to the survey, because the survey is really cool and it's open for folks to take, and they are especially interested in getting people who have been historically underrepresented in Portland to take a look at it. And, you know, no matter what your experience with like thinking about type of government, because obviously it's something that I'm geeking out over, but you know, you don't think about it that often. They still really want to hear your perspective.
And it's open for everyone, for like folks of color, for
yeah.
everyone.
Yeah. Specifically very wanting good. Portlanders of color, renters, low income folks, LGBTQ community members. They're especially hoping to get their input. But yeah, everybody can take the survey. And I think it runs until Monday morning. So if you want to do it, get it in by Monday. But some of the things on there, I wanted to just briefly go over what their impact might be.
Please, yes, some highlights, takeaways.
Yes, some highlights. One of them is maybe expanding the size of the city council. One thing about our city council, there's five of them, four commissioners and a mayor. That's the same as we had in 1913.
Get some more people up in there.
Get some more people.
Share the work. It's okay.
Our city has tripled in size since then and has become much more diverse.
Ted Wheeler.
Hey.
It's our little secret.
But yeah, expanding the size of the city council would mean that there's more representation to go around, more opportunity for, you know, for them to be doing their job.
For like people with different backgrounds to get up in there and
totally. Yeah,
diversity just helps a workplace work better and eventually a community work better, you know. Mm-hmm. It's just different walks of life, yeah.
And that, you know, if there's like two different types of government that they could move towards away from a commission style. But basically both of them would take away this administrative responsibility from a commissioner. So because you're kind of like trying to elect somebody with a very odd set of skills, it's like, can you represent community, can you work with and create legislation to run the city, but can you also be in charge of the housing bureau? Like, whoa, those are like, you know, a lot of varied skills that, you know, separate them out. You get people that are more specialized and more apt to do the job, and have your legislators focus on making the reforms and the changes that the city needs, and then have your administrators carry out those policies, right? So expanding the size of the city council is one, potentially adding districts to the city, because all of our commissioners and the mayor are elected at large. So there could be, you know, like the city councilor for Northwest or whatever, that they want to represent localized interests, which is, of course, very important, especially when you're talking about like East Portland that has so much like neglected infrastructure and investment that's persisted for so long. You know, having somebody on the city council who's like lives there and is like from that community to advocate for them could be a really good thing. Another one is the May primary versus the November election.
Here we go.
Yeah. Which it is weird that in Portland, some of our like city council positions, even the mayor, can be decided in a May primary. They don't even like just wait until November when everybody's like thinking about voting. And that does have an impact, right? Like the people who turn out to and like pay attention to a May primary are predominantly like older and white people.
And people who can't like have the time for it, for
yeah,
real,
people,
you know,
people
interest
who have
and time
and
yeah.
pay attention to it. And that is a subset, already a small subset or smaller subset of the entire Portland population, right?
Right?
And
yeah.
they're supposed to represent the whole city. And you're talking about like 51% of that subset approves of this person. So potentially moving it to November would mean that, you know, that election is actually going to be one that is participated in more widely. Yeah, there's a lot of really interesting ones. Potentially going towards, like, proportional representation, kind of like a parliamentary democracy.
Uh-oh.
Kind of like the Europes and the Latin Americas do, and have much more representative
<Blocks and> stuff, yeah.
representative stuff going on there. So yeah, that those are some things. I don't want to go too long and delve too deep into all of it, but that survey from the Coalition of Communities of Color about potentially changing the city charter will be on our website, and it's also available at bit.ly/charter-survey. And yeah.
I'm wondering real quick, I know we're going to wrap it up and go to our second part,
yeah.
For the community question at that point, we'll open up the phone lines, but has there been any kind of feedback from people in city council, representatives, about kind of dismantling this system and creating something more proportional and representative? Or, because I can definitely see why the people who are in these positions, or people that are kind of like in the pipeline for those positions,
yeah.
why they would want to keep it, because that's a lot of power one person has, you know, at the end of the day. So has there been any pushback from them wanting to share the power?
I haven't heard direct pushback. I do remember that in the 2020 election, it was something that Mingus Maps campaigned on, was that he was like excited and interested in, like, hey, let's do the charter change, switch it up, take my power away, you know. But I think that is a good thing to point out, that, you know, part of why political change, political reform, you know, especially when we're talking about systems, can be so difficult, is because it's impacting the people who have to make the decision, and boy, do they want to keep their power. But I think because it is, I think even Wheeler has said, like, yeah, commission government is weird, like, we don't need to keep it that way. I didn't even point this out, but ours is like extra bad, because the mayor has this extra power where you're not even electing somebody to be, you know, the administrator of the parks and the transportation mm-hmm. department. The mayor can just change it. So, like, everything that somebody campaigned on and got elected for, the mayor has the power to just switch it up.
What do you call that game when you have, like, a pebble under cups, and then you do that trick and you move around
yeah.
the cups, and then you figure, and that's, you know, that's not, that's
and then
a
the real trick is when you go over the edge of the table and you catch
and you
the
drop the cup and no
hand.
One knows, none
yeah.
the wiser.
I can't say I'm a magician.
Well, hopefully,
and I never have said that.
hopefully we can stir the, I don't know, I'm trying to make a reference for magic stuff. I can just think of a bunny coming out of a hat, but maybe this survey can be that bunny that's coming out of a hat.
Yeah, and you know, worth mentioning one quick thing is that,
please.
So right, they want to get this input from communities, right? Of like, what makes you feel most represented? What would, you know, what are you interested in seeing for city council? But it's not like, then that information goes to the Charter Review Commission, who can then put it on the ballot for voters in November. So it still does come back to the voter who will be eventually impacted by it. So that is the Charter Survey, Coalition of Communities of Color, bit.ly/charter-survey.
And that will, I think, also be on the website. So feel free to check it out after the show at kboo.fm/thegap.
It's a quick one, too. It's not, it's an easy survey, super quick, and yeah.
How long would you say it takes?
It took me maybe 10 minutes.
Psh, there you go. 10 minutes, and you can, that's what it takes to make a difference. All of us put in 10 minutes together. Look at us, 20, 60, 1,000 minutes.
Yeah, so many minutes. And we are going to pivot into our second part here in just a moment, where we will be taking your calls. You are listening to The Gap on KBOO Portland. We will be back in just a minute after our little midway song. Thank you.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. This is The Gap. We were just listening to a beautiful calming tune by Bushy called There's a Light. Beautiful.
Love that.
Yes. And now we are diving into our part two of the program for our community question, in which we ask you, the community listeners, a question, and then we would love it for you to call and comment and chime in and do that. And so for today, we are talking about unspoken modes of communications. Ooh, that's beautiful. And what does that really include? Things like love languages, attachment styles, and body language, which are all, you know, ways to communicate things without communicating with vocally. So I thought that would be an interesting thing to bring to the table. And our phone number is 503-231-8187. I can also give a little breakdown of what these things are. And they have the love languages, which, I think, again, I'm not an expert in any of this stuff.
Yeah.
I just play one on radio. I have words of affirmations, quality time, physical touch, acts of service, and receiving gifts.
Gift giving and receiving, I think.
You got a gift to receive.
a gift give is a gift given. You know?
Yes, that's nice. You know, and I heard that the way that your love language is also the way that you communicate love is the way that you want to be communicated love backwards as well, reciprocated. Mm-hmm. So that I think is interesting. And I just reading this, and I'm reading word of affirmations, mm-hmm. which is definitely my number one way of love. I'm like, I realize every week I shower you with words of affirmations.
Oh my gosh, I need to do it back.
I didn't even realize that. My goodness. Uh-oh, there it is, the unspoken communication.
You figured it out.
Oh my goodness, what does that stem from? Who knows? There's also attachment styles. Mm. There's a couple different attachment styles, and this is a theory that examines how a caregiver and a child bond and how it develops and those how that impacts development in social settings, emotional, cognitive behavior onto adulthood. So the dynamics between a parent or a caregiver and a child and how that affects them in the future. There's secure attachment, which is trusting and trustworthy, being able to communicate your emotions, being able to be flexible and attuned to your emotions. You have your anxious attachment, which is more sensitive, emotional, struggles to communicate, maybe stemming from feeling unnurtured and sometimes acts out for attention. Then you got your avoidant dismissive, which is emotionally distant, self-reliant to the point that they don't need anyone, a bit isolated and downplays their own emotion. And lastly, the avoidant and fearful attachment style, which is unpredictable, filled with internal conflict and drama, which, hey, we're all guilty of that sometimes. So this is there isn't a wrong way or a good way or you know, whatever way to be. I think this is all just kind of, you got to figure out what you are and what you want to be, you know, in my opinion.
That's a nice way to put it. When I found out about attachment styles, I was like, ow. I didn't really like that. It's kind of like a good way for me to go about and hurt my own feelings, you know. But because I mean my understanding, and you characterized it the same way, is that you know, the secure attachment style is where you would ideally like to be, but it is, you know, putting a name to what your existing patterns are and how those play out, you know, allows you to be cognizant of them and counteract them.
Yeah, you gotta know what you are in order to be what you want to be, I think, you know.
Whoa.
Step A, the Mercury retrograde. And we do have Camilla on the line. How are you?
Hi. I happen to be a retired child psychiatrist.
Mm.
So this has been an area of interest. And the biggest one that you've left out is the muscles of facial expression.
Mm.
So you can go into a bar and just sidle up next to a guy who's drinking and say, "Hey, buddy, you're sitting in my seat." But if you say that with a smile on your face, you won't get punched out.
Huh.
Also, messages can be confused or coded by how different parts of the face can give different messages. Like you can give one message from the nose down with the smile and another message from the nose up with the eyes.
Mm-hmm.
So that's probably the biggest modifier of the actual words. But the next biggest, I would say, is the emotional tone that you put into what you're saying. And that really tells the truth about what your intentions are, what you really mean.
Yeah, there's so much about that that is so important to face-to-face communication, and it feels especially like, you know, we haven't had too much of that recently.
I have noticed that I've been trying to be more descriptive with like the way that I like look surprised, since you know you have the mask, so you can't be like, you know, the gasp. I'm like, I try to do it with my eyes. So yeah, Camilla, that's
great. I think you know, combining the facial expression with the emotional tone is what people try to do in order to be sincere or to be, you know, one sort of attitude or another that they think people prefer to hear. I'm involved in XRPDX, and that has been a key issue of how we express things in our meetings. And you know, we say, well, you can say things in two different ways, and but say it the nice way.
I like that. I appreciate it.
I just want to congratulate you for your excellent reporting on the commission style of government. That was really a good report.
Thank you so much, Althea.
Bye.
I'm in deep, but thank you, Camilla. Appreciate you.
We'll see you, Camilla.
Bye.
That just reminded me of something. Because, I mean, we're talking a lot about, like, interpersonal communication, but there has been a thing more recently on the internet and on social media where people will make a statement and then do a slash and then another letter or a couple letters to indicate the tone that they were trying to strike. So, like, they could say, like, you know, you look good today, / S, as in serious, or / J, as in joking. I think J or JK, as in kidding. Or maybe S is sarcasm. I'm not totally in on it. I think that, but I mean, that definitely is something that can be lost in digital or written communication is, what do you mean?
Like, oh, of course. I don't know if you feel the same, but adding a bunch of exclamation mark on anything, an email, a text, just to make sure that I'm not coming off too hot, you know? Even though it's just like, I don't know, just don't want to seem like I'm being, I don't know, conveying that tone in
right.
text where, you know, I'm not, when you hear, especially when you have a limited ability to do it, you know, like the characters or whatever, and mm-hmm. you can't really just be sitting here, you know, like freaking James Joyce or something, like writing a whole thing out, making painting a picture and stuff. You just want to get a message across. But you know, like Camilla said, it's how you say it. So get, like the other day you texted me and you're like, I'm gonna call you, and I wrote soon instead of cool. And I was like, ooh, that sounded really aggressive.
I was like, I'll call you in like 10 minutes. And you were like, soon. Or I'll call you in a few. You said soon. And I just replied, yes.
Yeah, I was like, whoa, I did not mean that. But yeah.
I was like, she must be in a rush. I was like, I will. She's like, 1 second.
Didn't mean to do that. But
that's funny, though.
That's another layer of unspoken communication. You got the love languages, attachment styles, body language. Tone, which I remember when we talked about it, I'm like, I want to add tone, but that is mm-hmm. talking. So, but I get, you know, tone.
But it's
in,
like, it's just, also in how you're reading.
Yeah,
it. Like,
exactly.
It's not explicit.
Yeah.
If anyone else wants to call in thoughts about unspoken communication, but you do have to speak it, it's 503-231-8187. We'd love to hear from you.
I'm having a great time. I forgot. I felt like we're just naturally talking. I forgot we're even talking with the listeners. Yeah, 503-231-8187 is the phone number. We'd love to get your input on this. And you know, we're talking about unspoken forms and modes of communication. Let us not forget, it is Mercury retrograde. So
yeah.
Communications could be
could be better.
Yeah, could be
now more. Through, or it's like the 13th through the 3rd.
Yes, the 3rd.
And Tammy and I, because we talk about it on the show sometimes, we didn't want to go full into it this time, but both of us kind of got hit by it,
hitting
like right off the bat.
Hitting hard.
Yeah.
I don't even want to talk about it on the, because, you know, Mercury retrograde, the radio airwaves, somehow they're in cahoots together. So
yeah, it's all going to crash if we if we start talking about it.
but yeah. And then, you know, in the heels of Mercury retrograde, as just in the sense of having blocks in communications, the masks, you know, they really do, like, man, I want to. I'm hilarious, and it's really hard sometimes because I can't tell if people are laughing or not.
As someone who's also hilarious, I feel that.
It's hard because it's, you know, you hit them with a couple of good ones, and then there's an art
and
to this.
Maybe,
you know,
they're cracking a smile, but I don't know.
I don't need a
and
whole lot of laughs.
And if I don't know, I'm going to keep going. There's no stopping. It's doubling, tripling, quadrupling down.
It's just it's going to get bad, yeah. Please, like, just take off your mask, smile, and let me live my life.
If I say something funny, you better double over in laughter if I can't see your mouth. You better be slapping your knees hard.
It's for me, for my self-esteem, for your time, because the next 15 minutes will just be me trying to make you laugh, so please.
Yeah.
But the masks are huge. And then I wonder if the mask will have any kind of side effects on folks who, like, you know, people are babies now, but in that initial...
People are babies? Sorry.
Well, they're babies and then they're people. Or
what?
They're baby people.
Continue. I'm derailing this. Keep going.
It's like a puppy isn't a dog, right? It's a dog once it's an adult. I don't know.
A puppy is a dog. It's kind of like how a square is a rectangle.
Not all fingers are thumbs.
But it turns... But so it grows into a rectangle when it gets bigger.
So going back to, like, the attachment styles and love languages and stuff.
Yeah.
And body language. I wonder what effects having a mask and growing up with, like, people wearing masks and stuff, what effects, if any, you'll have on people who are children now once they grow up, mm-hmm. if it'll change their... I don't know, in some way. Because, I don't know, like, I love seeing people smile. And I don't know if I liked it as a kid, but, maybe, you know, I don't know, maybe... I'm sure everything, you know, embedded on, you know, not imprints, it, like, impacts people, you know, or, like, children.
Definitely.
Yeah, but I'm all over the place now.
I feel like the mask has been a little bit helpful for me as someone who is really easy to read. Like, you can tell how I feel about stuff, I think. And I've often tried to pretend that that's not true. but I think it gives me a little more mystique, you know?
Ooh.
Like, she's a little harder to read because you can't see the part of her mouth that is twitching into a smile because this is not a serious conversation. Yeah, but that's always been a thing. I want to go back to, like, body language because I have a thought about this, which is... that I have come to know myself as someone who finds eye contact to be very important.
Mm.
But I've also, you know, in realizing that, I mean, like, like, that's why I feel weird, is because this person did not give me the eye contact that I was expecting, right? But then realizing that not everybody reacts to eye contact in the same way, I've realized that, like, hey, whoa, you gotta loosen up a little bit here. You can't be like, you didn't look me in my eyes. Like, some people have trouble with eye contact, you know?
Right.
So I think it's also, like, you know, you get a read off of people from their body language the first time that you meet them and, like, how they feel about stuff. And you're also giving them information off of your body language. But, you know, getting a full read on somebody and whether or not you feel, like, good vibes or not, like, takes a couple times. That's what I'm telling myself, so I stop being judgmental about eye contact.
It's important to you.
But I know that it's not the end-all be-all and that I shouldn't hold it so highly.
I feel you on that. I mean, if it's something you hold for yourself, then, you know, that's also, you know, that there's this thing of, like, us projecting onto other people and them not meeting our expectations. And it's like, well, whose fault is that? You know, it's kind of on yourself for doing that, you know? So, like, but yeah, that's interesting. That's interesting, Althea. You give me a lot of thinking to do.
If you want to think with us, 503-231-8187. We'd love to hear from you. We're talking unspoken communication on The Gap today. Love languages, attachment styles, body language, anything you want to say. We're here to hear it. 503-231-8187. I know I am, like, when I found out about love languages, I was like, this explains so much. And, like, immediately tasked myself with, like, what are all my family members? What are my friends? Like, because, of course, it applies to romantic relationships, but also to, like, any interpersonal relationship where you want someone to feel, like, loved and appreciated. I think it's very interesting.
And knowing how you want to be loved and appreciated,
Definitely.
Too. It's a very, and or knowing about yourself and your tells and all that stuff. We do have another caller on the line. Can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Can you hear
me? Yes, we can hear you. How's it going?
You are right that understanding different love languages and temperament, personality styles, attachment styles, communication styles, ways of tone and facial expression are really important, so we don't jump to the wrong conclusions about others, and we can find ways to help people make sense of how we might be different from what they assume. And it could be a matter not only of being liked or not liked, effective or ineffective in communication, but being safe or unsafe, dead or alive. And in addition to that, it's important to understand how we have a caste system in which the same behaviors are not neutral. It's not a matter of principle, but of person or status, because if a white man in authority does that, it's laudable. But if a child, an indigenous person, an elder, someone who's considered poor or a prisoner does it, then it is a death sentence. So we have to be paying attention to that. And one of the things I learned is the more I understand myself and the diversity of others, and the longer I have different experiences, the more I get to be humbled and find that what I had judged in others, life will give me the experiences to develop the understanding and empathy. I could never understand why people just didn't hurry up and get things done. And then I had disabilities that meant I couldn't hurry up and get things done. And one of the things is that when I was in severe pain and severely cold, I'd be in the guarded from abuse tight kind of fetal ball and hunched over and tight muscled. And people would think that the not being able to see clearly and in the pain meant that I was frowning and hostile, or that I was crossing my arms and twisting my legs to keep me warm. They thought I was closed to their ideas and opposed to them. If I was getting kind of tight or pacing, or a child is, they may think that they're being disrespectful, but they're just terrified they're going to pee their pants. Mm-hmm. So I mean, a lot of times it helps kind of upfront tell people, hey, this behavior might mean that to you, but in my case, it means this. Or if you're really cold, overcompensate by wearing much warmer clothing so that you have an open body, unless that's considered sexually inviting when you don't want it to be. But I mean, looking at these different postures and being aware of how they are, as well as speech patterns. I grew up where a sentence that is a statement ends with a lower tone of voice.
Mm-hmm.
In my speech patterns, there's very little time between syllables and words and ideas and my turn to talk and your turn to talk. But I've noticed a lot of younger folks, especially seem to be young white folks, they end their sentences that would be a period as a question mark.
Mm-hmm. With an infliction.
As if they're trying to get validation all the time, or try to soften what they're saying.
Mm. Oh, yeah. I like that. Thank you for pointing. I'm glad you said it. I'm glad I didn't have to say that. But yeah, I definitely hear that for sure.
I also wanted to say that I really think it's important that we expand our ideas about mutual care and self-government. If we have 9 neighborhoods, 9 representatives on city council, each representing that one neighborhood. And then we have in each of the 9 neighborhoods fully housing a variety of ways those who are now unhoused or not having secure housing, so they're not just housed in the poor neighborhoods. And that we have a city manager that does the administration, and the elected do policy and overarching, and that we have a separate office that is separately funded, 10%, just like in a corporation, of the budget being for oversight in auditing. Unlike now, where the mayor gets to give plush positions to those they like and set them up for failure with oversight of bureaus they don't like, the mayor sets the agenda, and so very important things are not on the agenda, or people don't have time to prepare and to give community comment, and that the auditors are not allowed to really audit anyone, and everyone's a puppet of the police and the Portland Business Alliance. I also want us to have anyone that lives 7 or more months out of the calendar year is automatically an eligible voter, a registered voter for City of Portland. You don't have to be a U.S. citizen. You can be in prison, whatever. But if you live in Portland, housed or unhoused, 7 or more months of the year, you automatically have a voice and choice in what happens. And that all agenda items must have a pie chart with the decision and a Likert grading scale that says how this vote on money or staffing or policy corresponds with the so-called priorities for social justice, economic self-sufficiency, climate remediation, et cetera. And that we have every vote being instant runoff so that you scale first, second, third, fourth choice, and we don't have all the wasted time. And we have much more enforcement of campaign finance because Mayor Wheeler and Knapp violated the law and got away with it, and then they cut the budget of the auditor. I'm done. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Appreciate all of that.
Yeah, taking us back to the first half. Those are a lot of very, very important thoughts, and, you know, I'm in. I love what you said, except for maybe the district part. I don't want to go too off on it, but there was one of the studies that Sightline did proved that even adding districts would not guarantee that like racial minority groups, which make up a third of the population, they wouldn't get necessarily their pick of representative because of how geographically spaced out they are. So Sightline recommends multi-winner proportional voting to guarantee more, you know, racial diversity, letting BIPOC Portlanders have their pick. So that's just a quick aside, not to go too deep into my into the whole commission thing. But
just
yes,
I'm just obsessed with blackness. It's so it's like they're so obsessed with it to the point that they're willing to like change everything about or not change while everything else is changing in order to still keep people in some way like underrepresented, under the thumb of like inability, you know, and it's and out of like the halls of power. And it's really it's like, you're so obsessed with me, like, gosh, leave me alone, just let me live my life, you know. It's like, sorry, but yes, that was a callback to our first half of the show where we were talking about the charter and the Coalition for People of Color.
Coalition of Communities of Color has a survey going right
yes,
now.
Yes, and it's going to be up on the website, about a 5-minute, 10-minute survey for everyone to take. And it's due Monday, so do it before that if you can, if you want to.
No procrastinating.
But yeah, that was a great tidbit for a throwback for a little earlier segment.
Yeah, and I think this like unspoken communication conversation has been good, and I feel like there's more to say, so maybe we return to it.
Sure.
On the show in the future.
Sure, yeah, definitely. Because we were just, you know, body language, love languages, attachment styles, but there is more. Oh boy, there's more.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, like the kind of like overlaying thing of how different people can do the same like body
Very
language
true.
Have the same body language or the same reaction to something, and it'll be misconstrued or taken differently considering, you know, your proximity to, you know, privilege and all. So I didn't even want to get to that. I was trying to get to the good, to just stay on the we're all human thing, but it's true, society can be sometimes an evil and gross place and unfair, but one thing that I like to do as far as like body language hacks is when I'm feeling overwhelmed or in a, you know, it happens a lot in Portland, just like all white people, and I'm just like, yeah, I feel not scared, but like I feel so odd, like uncomfortable, you know. I just like do the Superman pose and just put my hands on my hips, I guess, and like, or you know, do a little pose like that. Not, it's called the Superman pose, but it's not, you know, I'm not doing it dramatically. And it just, you know, kind of like stiffen up my back a little, trying to get, you know, work on my breathing a little bit, also on unspoken, and it really changes my whole feel and vibe about the situation. And oh my God, we only have like 30 seconds left. This has been The Gap. Thank you all so much for calling. Thank you, Althea, for being you and being awesome.
Thank you, Tammy. Thank you, everybody who called. Thank you, everybody who listened. We gotta go.
We'll be back next week. See ya.
Love you. Bye.
Listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.